This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. To ban or not to ban? Later in the show, we'll hear from both sides in the debate over banning smoking in Kentucky. And we'll hear more about a rare Native American artifact discovered in Newtown. But first, in his book, The Business Romantic, Give Everything, Quantify Nothing, and Create Something Greater Than Yourself, author Tim Laybricht argues that we underestimate the importance of romance in our lives, and that we can find it in and through business by designing products, services, and experiences that connect us with something greater than ourselves. Laybricht is the founder of the Business Romantic Society and chief marketing officer of NBBG, a global design and architecture firm that helps organizations such as Amazon, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Google, and Starbucks create more meaningful experiences. And he joins us to discuss the Business Romantic. Tim, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Tim, what exactly is a business romantic? What are their qualities, and why are they so important for the workplace today?
Well, let me begin first by stating what the business romantic is not. So I'm in my book, and with this notion of business romance, I'm not referring to falling in love with your boss or with your colleagues or sending a bunch of flowers over to your colleagues in accounting. I'm also not referring to this notion of do what you love. I'm really talking about those experiences of that are romantic in a sense of unexpected beauty, surprise, delight, moments that make our hearts beat faster, that make our adrenaline rush, moments of vulnerability where we bring our full selves, a full emotional self to the work environment. So a business romantic is someone who appreciates emotion as being equally important as reason in business, someone who does things for the love of it, someone who understands that being vulnerable in business can be a great strength, someone who's kind and does things sometimes based on intuition in spite of knowledge based on data. So all these traits, I would say, characterize a business romantic.
What makes them so important for the workplace today, Tim?
It's very important because I believe we're witnessing an age of great disenchantment. In a way, I feel like that's happening every 100 years. 100 years ago, we had the beginning of the industrial age causing Taylorism and a very mechanical view of business and society. And then 100 years earlier, we had the age of enlightenment and reason, and then the original romantic movement emerging in response to it. And I think now we're witnessing the commodification and the quantification of everything. People are very disillusioned with business. We know from surveys that the trust in business leadership is eroding. Then a 2013 Gallup survey stated that only 13% of employees worldwide are fully engaged at work. So there's a sense of disenchantment and a sense of this contradiction that while we spend the majority of our waking hours at work, and work really shapes much of our identity and the story of our lives, we exclude so many characteristics of what makes us human: inconsistency, vulnerability, emotions, extreme emotions. We lock that away, we shut that out of the business environment. And I think that's a huge mistake, and it leads to attrition, it leads to disenchantment, and ultimately more unproductive and unhappier employees.
Well, I take it from the way you're talking, Tim, that business romantics probably make up a small percentage of the workforce?
I hope it's more. What I've found very interesting in the process of writing this book is when I started, I had come to the realization that I am a business romantic, and it took me a few years before I had the courage and the insight to realize that that's how I operate and how I want to operate in business. And then in the process of writing this book, I put on a romantic lens, and more people gravitated towards me, and I interviewed other people, and I realized, first of all, I'm not the only one. There's a lot of other people out there who might not use that label to describe themselves yet, but they feel very differently. They feel like that they want to have a very different kind of work experience, that they have higher expectations to business than the ones that that are met right now. And so I think there's a lot of business romantics out there. I would just encourage them, and that's why I wrote this book, to come out of the closet and have the courage to embrace it and articulate their needs more so than they have done in the past.
You're talking about a lot of the modern factors that create this confusion and disenchantment among people with their work. more specifically, what role does technology play in this disconnect, if any?
In business, we are used to saying we can only manage what we measure. That has become a mantra, I think, for decades now. And what I find curious and somewhat concerning is that we're now taking this one step further to almost like a notion like, you know, only the measured life is a good life. So we're now using analytical tools and algorithms and big data and other recent technologies to also measure and quantify and optimize things such as happiness or our moods, well-being, friendships, even our most intimate relationships. And this is the quantification of everything that I'm describing in the book, where we, in business and beyond, believe that only the measured truth, the quantified self is the only truth. And I'm making a case for not dismissing the value of data and technology at all, but recognizing that there is another dimension out there, another way of doing business, another way of living that does not have to rely only on data and on technology. And I think we are sort of very myopically believing in technology and data giving us the only truth. And I think it's a huge mistake.
You were talking earlier about what a business romantic isn't, so I guess you can say a business romantic isn't necessarily someone who's against technology. Can technology be an ally to the business romantic?
Absolutely. I'm really believing that a smart and romantic use of technology is the future, and I believe that's a huge opportunity. There is, for example, a school of poetic computation in New York whose mantra it is, or whose tagline it is, less demo, more poetry. So they're training young software developers and engineers to use technology to create more poetic, more ambiguous, more romantic customer and workplace experiences. And I think we're seeing apps. There's also a new mobile application called Detour that's actually created by the former CEO of Groupon, the e-commerce site, and that is offering audio walking tours that take you off the beaten path, that use technology to basically take you to areas in your neighborhood or in cities that are completely unexplored, that you would never go to just for the sake of convenience or for commercial purposes. So there are a number of very interesting apps and other technology products that reintroduce serendipity and surprise and delight into our life. There's also a startup in New York called Surprise Industries that actually offers surprises as a service through an online platform. So I believe there's a recognition that we are at risk of engineering the romance out of our lives through technology by making everything convenient and predictable and standardized. And at the same time, actually, that there is great potential in using technology to redesign serendipity and surprise and a little bit of magic and madness into our standardized and predictable lives.
Do you see signs today that people still have this yearning for a sense of the romantic in their lives and in their work?
I believe that, first of all, when it comes to our lives in general, I believe that more or less we are all secretly romantics. If you think about the most meaningful moments in your life, and I interviewed a number of people for the book and asked them what was the most meaningful moment in your life and what was the most meaningful professional moment, there's actually rarely that people point to the sort of the formal events such as wedding or others or to promotions in the workplace. It's very often very unpractical, unexpected things. Like, for example, the being in a post-mortem project session where somebody was just driven to tears because the intensity of emotions was so strong during the project and that people were sad that the project was over. And that moment, I think, kind of remained as an indelible impression. So I think we all look for these moments of unexpected beauty, of sudden random kindness, often also the random kindness of strangers, that make or break our day and that we then talk about still, you know, for many, many years. And we are craving these moments, and I believe because business is such an important operating system of our lives, we need to find a way to find them and create them in business.
So are you seeing signs in the business world itself among corporations that there's a growing demand for these romantic experiences?
Absolutely. There is a I think there's really a sea change happening where workers and managers are beginning to recognize the value of showing up in a truer, more authentic version of yourself. Just this weekend, there's a conference in San Francisco called Wisdom 2.0 that's looking at how technology can enhance mindfulness and a more authentic way of living at the workplace with thousands of attendees. But even if you look to Fortune 500 corporations, there are CEOs such as Satya Nadella, the new CEO of Microsoft, who has been widely credited with really reinvigorating Microsoft's culture of innovation since he took the helm in Redmond. And I read a profile of his in Wired magazine last month, and he was described, or his leadership style was described, as warm, fuzzy, and slightly bonkers. and I read it, and I was thinking, wow, those are actually, 5 years ago, probably no one would have said this in a positive way about someone, but he has a very ambiguous, soft, and in a way romantic leadership style that seems to be possible these days and seems to be in demand. So yes, I am very optimistic that there are there's definitely a movement there and more people beginning to push for change at the workplace.
Bonkers is an interesting choice of words. Is it a fair thing to say that maybe we should say whimsical? Is being whimsical part of being a business romantic?
Whimsical is a term that I like a lot because it points to an understanding of the arts, of the subtleties, of the ambiguities, of a sense of adventure, and also of beauty, of the value of aesthetics at the workplace. I mean, I think what happens very often when you are employed is, and studies prove that after 6 months your initial enthusiasm fades and you suddenly find yourself trapped into the deadening routine, right, of sort of the same task, the same people, same job, and then cynicism is often the inevitable escape or retreat for you. And so I believe that being whimsical and finding the beauty in the seemingly mundane and making small changes to your workplace, even if it's just swapping your desk, swapping your roles with your colleagues, creating the space for yourself to run meetings differently, to run your organization like a romantic organization and feel what that feels like, you know, this different kind of operating. I think those are all ways to overcome the routine that kicks in and this sense of cynicism that often begets us.
We'll continue our conversation with Tim Lebrecht after the break. Are you a business romantic? Join the conversation then, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon is Tim Lebrecht. His new book is The Business Romantic, Give Everything, Quantify Nothing, and Create Something Greater Than Yourself. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tim, what's the value of the romantic approach to a company, its customers, and its employees?
The value of the romantic approach is, if you want to measure it or identify it within the existing paradigms of doing business, is there's obviously a huge cost of losing employees who are disengaged, and there's a huge economic price that you're paying if employees are not engaged, and they might be passively or actively sabotaging or undermining your culture. In order to combat that and address it, romanticism or creating a more romantic environment where they are allowed to express themselves and experience their day-to-day work in a very, very different way that is outside of the mechanics of predictability and standardization and the same old way of doing business, I think is a huge asset. When it comes to customers, the difference really is a difference between liking and loving. And I hate to point to Apple because Apple is so often a popular example, but it is a great company that has, of course, demonstrated how valuable it is to have a devout followership and people who really have faith in your product and really love what you do, and not just buy the product because they're convenient or they are of their utility. So if you manage to create a company whose culture is so attractive and in a way is unpredictable and exciting and remains a sense of mystique and aura, then you have the ability to create a really, really strong bond with your customers that will outlast I believe, a lot of competitive threats and help you succeed in the long term.
What kinds of things can businesses do to create a more romantic workplace?
You know, it's interesting. You could argue that there's a lot of value in creating small pockets, small hacks to your workplace, small pockets of change in organizations, rather than this being an initiative that comes from the top down. You know, so I would say that if the CEO embraces it and announces the launch of a business romantic initiative company-wide, it might be met with skepticism, because in a way it's, you know, kind of the opposite of romance. So I would look to every single employee and managers to make small changes to their routine that can start with talking to strangers on the way to work. We know from research that people who do that report higher levels of happiness. Then when you're at work, you can, again, under the rubric of making the familiar strange again, you can swap your roles, swap your desks. You can do PowerPoint karaoke, where you improvise over slides that you've never seen before. We did that at a company that I work for. You might laugh at this and think, oh, this is just fun and perks. And sure, it is fun. But at the same time, what I'm looking for are these examples or these little tools that, on the one hand, produce romantic value and they're fun and they make a more meaningful work environment. At the same time, if you look at this PowerPoint karaoke example, where you improvise over slides you've never seen before in front of others, it actually strengthens your improvisation skills, which you could argue is actually a very valuable skill to have in an ever-changing, increasingly complex environment. You could say improvisation is the only way to respond to that. So I think those are some of the changes that can start at a very small level, but ultimately really transform the organizational culture in your business. You can create space for people to envision a different way of doing business. You can have candlelight dinners with your colleagues and maybe with strangers. You can invite somebody you've never met before in your organization for lunch. You can create almost like a secret society at work that comprises of rebels who envision what the company might look like, you know, if it weren't constrained by operational requirements. So the first step really is to make people feel like a romantic and give them a playing field to express themselves, so that they become more confident in the romantic traits, and then really drive that incrementally and increasingly into the fabric of your organization.
Well, it sounds like all the things you're talking about would also enhance creativity, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. I think it's funny, I've worked for a product design and innovation consultancy for 7 years, and we advised a number of Fortune 500 companies, and so many of them came to us and said, so how can we become like Apple? What are the best practices of innovation? What is the formula there? And we often were trying to tell them that, well, you know, it has to do with yourself. You have to be really bold and take a risk and not copy another organization's culture, and there are really no best practices in a way, or at least not a reliable set of best practices when it comes to innovation. It's a leap of faith, really. It's all about taking a risk, and it's about creating these romantic, serendipitous encounters, these moments of strangeness where you expose yourself to a new kind of reality, where you experience work in a different way, where you understand your customer in a different way, where you meet strangers and are exposed to new ideas, which happen very often on the fringes of the organizational networks. And that's why these romantic moments are so important, right? They spur innovation, they expose you to that new kind of thinking, and they keep you on your toes, and they make sure that you don't just get stuck within your comfort zone. And that really is, I mean, that is the very essence, the very source of innovation for any firm, for creativity.
Now, Tim, what was the first time you had a business romantic moment? What was it like?
I had a very seminal experience in 2004 when I worked as one of the advanced press chiefs for the Olympic torch relay. It was the first ever global torch relay leading up to the Athens Games in 2004, and we were visiting 32 former Olympic host cities. And I also went to Cairo. The flame came to Africa for the first time as part of that relay. And I remember that I was standing on Tahrir Square in Cairo, surrounded by thousands of cheerful Egyptians who were incredibly proud about the flame coming to their country. And I think I realized two things. The first one was that it's possible to hold two opposing truths in one mind and still retain the ability to function, to quote F. Scott Fitzgerald. So on the one hand, was very, you know, the Olympics are very commercial, obviously, and sponsors were breathing down my neck. And on the other hand, I saw the power of the Olympic idea in the faces of the Egyptian people. And that contradiction was interesting. And the other thing I realized was that the intensity of that moment, the intensity of that torch relay campaign, was exactly the emotional intensity was exactly what I wanted to have for the rest of my career. And it became my question: how can we keep the flame alight? How can we make sure that we create a sense for awe and wonder and magic and for that emotional intensity in our day-to-day work environments? And that led me to think about more about this topic and ultimately write this book.
Who are some of the prominent business romantics in the world today, Tim?
Steve Jobs clearly was one, you know, in his unpredictable and somewhat mysterious behavior, and also his unconditional belief in excellence and the beauty of products, even the beauty of the products that he couldn't see. There's this famous story of him insisting on the interior of the products designed as impeccably and as beautifully as the exterior, because he said that it's important because people can feel the soul of products if they're designed in the interior. So he clearly was one. I think Sir Richard Branson is another one who has always been, in a good way, has been this whimsical fool who wasn't afraid to envision a world as it is not and then launch the appropriate innovations. But, you know, the business romantics don't have to be CEOs. They don't have to be entrepreneurs. They can also be found in middle management, really at all levels of an organization. For the book, I interviewed the editorial director of Twitter, Karen Wicker, who told me that she likes going to work because the main reason she's going to work is to find out what happened overnight. So again, the sense of adventure of a story that's about to unfold, that's being written. I also interviewed a middle manager who used to work for Best Buy, who told me about the beauty of spreadsheets and how that is a meaningful experience for him. So again, romanticism and being a business romantic is really a way of viewing the business world and reframing it and making small adjustments to derive more meaning from your day-to-day experience. And it can happen at any level of the organization.
So in wrapping things up, Tim, what are some of the steps any of us can take to bring more romance to our work?
Well, the first step is to reappropriate that term. So often we hear people say, I'm a business person, I'm not a romantic, or this notion of romanticizing being something negative. I think we need to allow ourselves to be romantics and to romanticize in business and not dismiss it as something that is warm and fuzzy, but that is warm and fuzzy in a good way and whimsical and very positive. And then you can, I think I would start very small by changing some of your habits, some of your behaviors, even just creating 1 hour every day to meet with colleagues and think about what would it mean to have a more humane, a more romantic, a more adventurous, a more meaningful work environment, and then making some of those changes, even just carving out 1 hour every day to do that, will create a romantic muscle and a romantic ability in your organization. And that's the first catalyst of change.
Tim, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Tim Lebricht is the author of The Business Romantic, Give Everything, Quantify Nothing, and Create Something Greater Than Yourself. After the break, we'll delve into both sides in the debate over banning smoking in the Commonwealth. What do you think? Are you for it? Against it? Join the conversation at 513-419-7100. And what's a gorgip? They found one in Newtown, and Bill Reinhart will tell us more about it. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.